It's the first show of this bright new year, 1963. And I might as well point out, before we go any further in this fiasco, I understand very few people are listening tonight. We have just taken our special electronic survey. We found that there are 7 people in the Bronx. There are 12 people in Long Island listening. There are 2 guys in Manhattan, one of whom who is only half listening. There is 3 people, a group, in Staten Island. There are 7 men in New Jersey. There is 1 guy in Philadelphia. The man in Trenton just left. And we'll sit down now, and let's try to get it organized. Now I want to say, before we go much further, that 1953 didn't work out. 1954 laid an egg. That's all of you know. 1955 was moderate. Well, we have high hopes here, haven't we, Walt, for 1963. By George, it's a clean slate. And I think that there is almost an unlimited possibility for, well, as you know, I work in the fiasco as my medium. Some people work in clay, others work in burlap, some work in soap. I'm going to tell you about the time I won the prize carving the ivory soap in an ivory soap contest for kids under 8. I'll tell you what I carved. It was very interesting. There are women and children with us right here at this time, so we understand that we'll have to keep that until just before 12 midnight. But I was a very realistic soap carver. Now, we have an unlimited, just unlimited. We have a whole year ahead of us. Now, some of us won't make it. Well, you know, just the way it is, the law of attrition works on all of us. Some of us won't make it, but we have a whole year. A fantastic set of, well... Now, I don't know whether or not we should... you know, I got a letter from a guy. Since this is the first year, we're going to have to... The first of the year, I think we ought to lay out some basic principles for the forthcoming year. Don't you think this is fairly honest? Or it's like a preface to a book? I want you to forget all the rotten shows I did last year. Forget them. I'll forget all the rotten letters you wrote. Okay, we'll start out clean. And we're only going to do... we're going to only do good shows this year. I figure that's what we're going to... And all of our insights are going to be clear. Very clear. I'm going to do away with fuzzy insights. And I'm going to make... I've made a resolution that I'm going to become at least 40% more sensitive during the coming year. I think that in many areas, Walt, I've been notably insensitive. I'm going to be very sensitive this year. And I think if I can hold out until June, seriously, with this, I'm working on push-ups and things. I'm doing some deep knee bends. I started them this morning. That if we hold out till June, I think that I can arrange to have my psyche bruised even more than any previous year up to this point. I think I can outdo my sensibilities. I can be bruised, just wonderfully. And if you're... I'm looking forward to this year. I think some wonderful rotten things are going to happen to us. I can just imagine a sick comic finding out that it's going to be a good year, which would really bug the daylights out of him. And since I have been called if not a comic, at least sick by enough people, I'm looking forward to better disasters, better fiascos, better troubles, more interesting neuroses. I figure, and more devastating trends in 1963 than we even experienced in 61. And you know how that was. Europe, Mailer was blowing corks out of his ears the last 6 or 7 weeks of 61. I'm looking forward for Mailer to explode in a puff of smoke before the 4th of July. Just out of sheer poo, you know. Edgar Kennedy worked that one down to a fine art. So I hope all of you are going to stick with me. And all of you kids that are listening, let me tell you, boy, before we hit June, I'd say you and I are going to experience more. I think we're going to experience more inequities. It's kind of nice. So you see, it's all set up. All right? Now, I got a letter from a guy, you see, typical of this problem. I got a letter from this guy. He says, Shepard, I heard your Christmas night program, you phony. What is this crud you're giving all the people. That life is good, that you can put your foot down on a field of ground and look at the sky, you phony. You and I both know it's rotten. Now, when are you going to get honest? What is it you're selling out to? Is it the Mandarin House? W.R.? What is it? You know you're selling out when you start telling people that life itself is good. Sign. I'm very disillusioned. Very hurt. Anarchist. Beatnik rebellion type. Actually signed his name this way. Well, now, I don't know how to handle that, you know. It is an awful thing to have to admit that swinging doors don't hit you. You know, there isn't a sick comic worthy of the name that would admit it. And it is awful to admit that you don't get put down by every chick. That would be... I think it would ruin Woody Allen's act. You know, just automatically, just out the window. It's terrible have to admit that you put some people down, you know? And you're the rotten guy that other people have to fight against. Oy. Oh, that aggressive son of a gun. Oh, look at him up there. Oh, his glasses. Well, all right, so it's going to be a new year. We're going to wipe the slate clean. We're going to work from inside. Here on in. I'll tell you, I hope that if we work it right, I say by August, Walt, I think we ought to be able to working in disaster so well that our rating will be so low that we'll be off the air by July or August at the very latest. I'm working on it. Now, you see, because you have to have problems. You got to have problems. I mean, I don't know what would happen really if The Realist, for example, was to come out with its ABC figures, which is the circulation figures, and it beats out Time Magazine. I mean, that would be pretty discouraging. Now, so we're going to work all together tonight, as is so often the case. We're going to attempt it anyway. And, I'd say it was about 3 or 4 years ago, we started a thing which I think I'm going to continue this year, even though tradition itself is repugnant to many of us who feel that tradition itself is gnawing away at the vitals of truth and honesty. Come on here with tradition. Well, please get my haiku music up. In there, I think tonight what we will do... Oh, speaking of haiku, did you, since most of you don't have a chance to get any newspapers with the thing going that's going, did you hear about that guy up in Greece, New York? I will read it to you. Because being bugged is almost a major art form today, and expressing your buggedness becomes very, 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 if you work it right, it's very commercial. There's a guy up in Greece, New York. A 1 by 1 foot flashing neon electric sign atop Ralph Menzies' ranch-type home in suburban Greece, New York, is causing stir among the neighbors, many of whom do not care for it. Menzies, an engineer with a Rochester electronics company and the father of two little tykes, said he erected the sign, quote, to do something different. And also, it is my way of objecting to what's happening in the world today. He has a sign that flashes off and on during the Christmas season on top of his house, and all it says is, humbug! Hold it there, Walt. It's all right. Whoa, humbug. It's funny. Now, I would make a prediction right now at this point that next year it will be possible to buy electronic signs that flash the word humbug in any Woolworth store. It's an obvious commercial item. I mean, it's just obvious. And so I figure that... It's interesting. You know, I doubt whether, if I might be allowed a little editorial here at this moment, I wonder whether there are more than 3 people out of 100 today who do not feel that civilization is a plot against them, who do not feel that the world conditions are specific plots that have been put together by rotten, insensitive, terrible people to bug them and to disturb their beautiful, placid life that they know they would lead if there wasn't that rotten civilization out there always getting ready to blow itself up. I just wonder whether there are more than 3 out of 100 who don't feel that's true. Curious. Because I suspect that most people today, many people today, I can't say most, I'd say many people, I can't be that that dishonest. Speaking of dishonest, this is WOR-AM at FM New York, and we'll be here, you know. I'm curious about that aspect of our time, the feeling that most people have that they don't have any responsibility for all the stuff that's going on in the world. In short, they're not really part of the civilization that they claim that's grinding them down. Now, the quickest way to get a lot of people to follow you is to tell everybody that you want to have follow you that they're beautiful people. And that it is true that they are not appreciated. That it is true that their attitudes and their mores are much, much more pure and beautiful than anybody else. And that if we could only get rid of those rotten people who are causing the trouble in the world would be beautiful. Because it would be run by people like us, and we're beautiful people. You follow what I'm saying there, Walt? I'm curious, because I sit in all kinds of... there must be at least 25 movies a month now that always shows this one theme of the young, beautiful, idealistic person being destroyed by the terrible, decadent, rotten civilization. Fascinating theme. Now, that's based on an interesting... on a really interesting conception of mankind. And the concept really is that there are people who have absolutely no sin or no... there is not a single bit or streak or line or thin vein of badness at all in them. Interesting. I would like to know one of those people. I've never met one in my whole life, including yours old friend truly here. Especially so. Never once met one. I've met a lot of people who claimed they were that way, but they wound up by hitting me in the mouth, which made me wonder whether they were really peaceful people, you know, in the end. Always had trouble with loose teeth after meeting them for a while there. Or you know, various other things and sundry. I'm curious about that. Of course, when you get a whole civilization, or at least a whole country feeling that it's pure and beautiful, look out. Then you have trouble. I notice this often pops up. If you've ever had the chance to listen to Radio Moscow, well, you are listening absolutely to words coming out of the paradise. There is no question this is a completely unquestionable it is paradise. And even when there is a question about anything going on, once in a while they'll throw this in, it's always little things. Like certain people have been making fun of the fact that we can't get fur-lined mittens in the department store. Well, this is because in the workers' paradise we are doing things and so on. Well, now, I don't know. That worries me. Just that attitude. Just as when somebody writes a novel and they have the pure, unsullied character running through it all the time. This is always curious. It bothers me. Because it is another and a restatement of the Superman theme. You know that there have been several philosophers state this theme. One of the philosophers, 19th century particularly, of course, Carlyle referred to this continually, the Superman theme. Nietzsche occasionally touched on it, although Nietzsche did it in a very different way. The Superman idea, which is to say that there is a man who is beautiful, pure, clean, wonderful, all the rest of the Boy Scout oath in spades. He's got it. And by definition, I'm curious, this has always led to disaster, you know, whenever the Superman pops up in society, whether he be a Superman of insight or a Superman of truth, which is always fascinating, a Superman of morality. He either winds up leading an inquisition, which can often be quite bloody, and usually results in some fairly interesting moments of truth. He often winds up stoking gas ovens with people who are not supermen or pure or especially sensitive. And I'm wondering how far in that direction we will go in 1963. How far in the direction we will move. That is, of thinking that there are people among us who really do have a total stranglehold on truth. Another thing I'm fascinated, too, by, as an American, I wonder how much further the general dissatisfaction with the whole process of democracy will go in 1963. I've noticed among college students that I've had the chance to meet and talk to, and that's been quite a few in the last 4 or 5 months, I've noticed a growing, subtle dissatisfaction with democracy itself. In short, not specific politicians or specific issues or specific attitudes or specific parties, but impartially, all politicians are lumped together by many students as being bad people, just the terrible. That's politics. Anything that any one of them says is in the realm of propaganda, propaganda, that's all propaganda. And whatever they feel is truth, or whatever they say is truth, whatever other people say is always defined as propaganda. I've seen this all around me. I'm curious how long this will go. Do you know that this is exactly the attitude that obtained in the Germany before Hitler? A great dissatisfaction with the democratic process. Oh, by the way, I have to quickly point out that the democratic process is a little more than integration, in case you're interested. By my definition of democracy, most people think of it today in terms of integration or minority groups, usually racial. They have a hard time realizing that democracy also means minority groups politically and also philosophically. This is a tough one. In short, does your democracy also include Faubus? I'm curious. Yes, it does. Remember that, whether you like it or not. Most people are say, yeah, I'm for democracy, until you name a specific guy. Then they're for shutting him up. And they're not quite for it. And so I wonder how much this will move forward in 1963. I hope it moves backward, but I don't think it will, because I've noticed the trend toward a genuine kind of anti-democratic attitude moving forward in our time. Now, when I say democratic, I'm not talking about anti-integration. I'm talking about anti-democratic process, a general dissatisfaction with what most people think is the whole thing of government, which is, quote, keeping them down and or steering them into a war. It runs through a lot of writing today, and I'm just curious how much further. Now, this is laying the groundwork, as it has always historically, for a replacing of that system by another system. Now, when that other system comes around, it should be interesting to see. it's funny. I've noticed, for example, little things like, well, Kennedy's been in for 2 years. Already people are saying he's a dictator, dictator. I've heard him say that. Yeah, I've heard kids say that this is a kind, because you know, he's got responsibility. He has to take action in certain instances. It took 3 turns for people to say that about Roosevelt. Now you're in 6 months and you're a dictator already. Well, I'm curious about what people are feeling, and in our time, I think we're going to see some vast changes philosophically. Now when a man says, for whatever reason, when a man says, I have infinite morality and I have truth, I am more interested in peace than anyone else, I am a man who really loves, be careful. This is a man who's proclaiming himself a superman. Curious how far that's going to go in 1963, and it will move forward. Speaking of 1963 and realistic attitudes, I noticed recently... it's very hard to say that in Europe. In most of the older countries, it's hard to get up and claim that you have a cornerstone on truth or beauty or sensitivity or whatever the devil it is that you claim you've got, because they've seen too many guys who proclaimed it in the past, and it's always led them into trouble. Here, we are not quite yet experienced in that line. I have a feeling that the decay of democracy will not come about through either left or right. I think it will come about through a third movement, that seems to feel that all of government is a plot against me. All of government. And so the next guy that'll come up will say, I'm not a politician at all, and I don't represent government at all. I represent people. Just ordinary, simple people. I'm for the people, and I'm for peace. I want all of your children. Left, right, in between, center, upright, sideways, communist, John Bircher. Oh, I'm just a little people, and I wonder when we're going to get rid of... And it's going to go on and on, and people by the billions are going to follow this. Because there's been a great change in our time. A very subtle one, but a great one. For example, it would have been unthinkable as recent as 10 years ago to do an entire LP literally lampooning the entire office, the body, the people, and the whole group surrounding the President of the United States. You know that, Walt? It would not have been considered in good taste merely because there was the respect for the presidency itself. That does not pertain any longer. Interesting. And I'm not of course, immediately I can hear people putting me down and say, well, this guy, you know, square idiot, so forth and so on. I'm not defending anything. I'm merely saying there has been a change. I'm pointing this out, and it's very interesting to see. And within, I'd say, within 5 or 6 years, you're going to see this going further and further. Now, the theater of Hitler's Germany, or pre-Hitler's Germany, spent a good deal of its time telling people that. Are you aware of that? It spent a good deal of its time telling people that all of politicians are corrupt, all of government is corrupt, all the institutions are corrupt, and all of the people who have been in a position of leadership are terrible, dishonest people who are involved in their own thing of power and so on, and the only people that count are the little tiny people, you. Hitler always, by the way, paraded to people as being one of the little people. He always prided himself on being a corporal, a little nothing corporal. He never hid the fact that he had little education. He came out of the slums. He lived as a bum in Vienna and so on, and was indigent. And this brought the people to him because he pretended, or he believed, I suppose, for a long time, that he really did represent the people. And the people thought, well, get rid of the politicians. Let's have our man run us. And I'm curious how much further it's going to go. And during the 20s, if you're interested in theatrical history, there were several playwrights who, in a sense, undercut all the attitudes within a country, which was fairly civilized. Certainly, it was a literate country. Undercut everybody's belief that there was such a thing possible as democratic processes, that democratic processes often involve a long, slow, painful process of conciliation, work, and so on. This is what democracy involves, unfortunately. It slowly cut away at this and kept telling the people that the real thing that counted was freedom, primarily freedom from the government, freedom from all these things that are holding you down. Brecht was one of the leaders in that. It's interesting to me that Brecht happens to be suddenly now very popular in the United States because he roughly is saying the same thing all the time. And he keeps telling the people that the really sensitive, wonderful people are the little people. And, of course, everyone assumes he's a little people. And his chief message roughly can be construed as survive. That's the important thing, you. Survive. Well, maybe that's the most important thing. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. I can only say that it has led to some very interesting irresponsible acts because it made it possible in Germany, you see, to say to a German, well, when he was confronted with the idea that they were burning people in gas ovens, he said, well, after all, what is more important, the survival of Germany itself? That is important. The German people must survive. That is... Well, because he was told over the years, subtly by himself and by people around him, and of course it is not a plot, it just comes right out of the people themselves, that in the end you begin to be very concerned over yourself only. So it's very hard to have concern over other people who are being burnt, really, in the end. And if you do have any concern, you can wind up by rationalizing that it is for the good of the better, the bigger thing. That it's the bigger thing that is really counting here. I'm intrigued how much further this will go over the world as a kind of reaction to a lot of things which have come about as a result of the Industrial Revolution and one thing another, until finally we are living in a world today. I am more in agreement now as I look at the world around me and see little things going, and I'm pleased. I set myself up as no pundit. I'm merely a citizen of the 20th century who is probably as interested in things going on around him as the next guy, maybe more than some, maybe less than others. But I have come to some conclusions, having done some traveling too around the world, that in 10 years there will be some super dictators, truly super dictators. Dictators that make the dictators today look like aldermen, make them look like little ward captains compared to what they will be. And when I say dictators, I'm talking about in respect to the numbers of people they will control and the areas of the world that they will be over and in charge of. And I wonder how long it will be before we ourselves will come to, or it will come out of our world, that there will be some great truth leader pop on the scene. Curious. He will pop. He won't come out of the political parties, by the way, Walt. He will not come out of either the Republican or the Democratic, I feel. You know, speaking of the reality of the world, did you see what the Swedes did recently? The wild thing. The Swedes had a big nationwide referendum. A newspaper started it, and it got later to be a government thing, to pick a national bird for Sweden. And what do you think the Swedes picked? The Swedes picked the blackbird, which is as close to a starling as you can get without actually squawking. And the reason that they picked the blackbird is because they figured that why they like the blackbird, and it's going to become, it's the Swedish national bird, is it because it doesn't cut out. It doesn't split when winter comes on. Just like the starling. It hangs around, you know. And it says the reason that they like it is because it stays here with us during the winter time. And it's one of us. So why not name it our national bird? I can think of no better bird than the starling to be the U.S. bird. He's loud. I mean, it's one of the more lovable traits of Americans. He's loud. And he certainly, he goes around in gigantic flocks. I don't know whether you've ever ridden any time between 4:30 and 9, getting on the D train, you'll find out about flocks and humankind. I bet there are guys lined all the way up to Scranton now in a gigantic traffic jam just trying to get back to Teaneck. Well, so, you know, this is only a starling traffic jam. And as far as a national bird is concerned, in a very few years, our national bird is liable to be extinct, you know. The bald eagle. How would you like to have a national bird that's extinct? How's that for symbolism? Your national bird, well, he's dead, you know. He's extinct. There's a couple of them in the museum down there. They got one down that's stuffed. Boy, oh boy, how's that for betting on a losing side? Now, I'm not anti-eagle. Let's look it right in the eyeball. I mean, the eagle is no longer an important bird in America. He's had his day. I don't know whether he ever was important in America, but nevertheless, he's not as big, let us say, as pigeons. Boy, I'll tell you, there's some pretty big pigeons around here. You got to see my new hat I got for Christmas. Plenty of big pigeons. And yet, you know, the real national birds never get nominated. They don't. If the starling infuriates you as an idea for a national bird, I would like to recommend the spatsy. What's the spatsy? Don't you know the spatsy? You know what a spatsy is? It's a sparrow. That's a spatsy. That's Indiana for sparrow. You see, there goes another spatsy. And spatsies, spatsies a sparrow. I think a sparrow, just an ordinary rotten little brown sparrow. I'll tell you what the sparrow is. The sparrow is all those little brown bugs and birds. They look like little bugs that you see hopping around in the middle of the flocks of starlings. They're the ones that aren't making much noise but are getting the gravy. You know, see, and you'll see once in a while, you see a big flock of pigeons. You see, and there's some little old lady who's always down there feeding the pigeons. What you'll see running around among the pigeons down there around their feet, you see these little things, little brown things, running like mad and grabbing a corn before the big ones can get it. Those are spatsies. Don't you know a spatsy? Well, I guess people in America don't even know the spatz. They just call him a bird. Now they... No, not a sparrow. He's a bird. No, there are different kinds. There's the big, there's a beautiful, there's a song sparrow. That's a kind of different kind of sparrow. A spatzy is a certain kind of sparrow. It's a little short, fat, runty sparrow. Kind of brown, right, Walt? Just completely brown and grayish on the top. Almost completely camouflaged. He's camouflaged. He knows a sharp deal when he sees it. I can remember when the spatzies would be migrating. They didn't really migrate. The spatzies stay around in the winter, you know. But what they used to do would be to get together in flocks in the wintertime. There'd be 87 billion spatzies just covering the whole landscape. And it would be in the fall time. They would get together. They have kind of a spatzy convention. I guess when the fall comes on, they yell and scream and holler. And on the other side of town, all the starlings would be gathered. And then a few weeks after that, they would break up and the spatzes would start freelancing again. They're very independent birds. I would like to see that bird, I think, since the starlings seem to offend the people. I think the spatzy is a completely non-offensive little bird. I have never heard anybody be anti-spatzy, although certain birdhouse people get very angry at spatzies, don't they? I don't know why that is, because for one reason, they seem to like bluebirds but hate spatzies. Yeah, I guess just like Don Marquis said, be beautiful. That pays. I mean, you can be a crummy bird, but as long as you got blue feathers, you're okay. If you got little crummy old brown and gray feathers, forget it, Dad. You've had it. That's the truth. And yet, some of the friendliest birds I've ever known are spatzies. Did I tell you the time that I followed a spatzy for over half a block up on Central Park South? Yeah, there was a spatzy going to work or something. I just followed him. He was hopping along the sidewalk by the St. Regis up there. You know where they had this outdoor cafe? And he was hopping along there trying to snipe peanuts or something. He was hopping along looking at all the people drinking. And I was watching him. A spatzy goes in little spurts. Now, a starling walks, literally walks. I think that's what infuriates you about starlings. His knee action is very much like yours. Yeah, he walks just like you, and he swaggers a little bit. But a spatzy goes... Then he goes... And he went directly west. Now, I don't know why he was going west, but he went directly west on Central Park South. And I wanted to know which way he was going to go, you know, when he came to the corner there at 57th Street. He goes... He arrives at the corner, looks around, and goes... Turns left. He goes down 6th Avenue. So I followed after him. You see, I'm about 20 feet behind him, walking slowly. People thought I was a nut. You know, I'm walking slowly, watching the spatzy. And there's a gentleman sitting there with a girl. The typical Lolita situation, you know. This guy's about 65 years old. He's sitting there with this 12-year-old chick, and they're in the St. Regis, and they're drinking these fancy drinks and sitting there. And the spatzy goes... And I'm walking along, and this chick looks over, and she looks down, and he's right down there on the ground. And she says, oh, look at the little birdie. He goes... I'll have a crying out loud. Well, I walked right up behind him, and suddenly the spatzy, of course, got a little nervous. He was getting downtown, and you could see that also he's probably late for work or something. And he goes... He gets about, I'd say, roughly... Oh, about 75 or 80 feet to the downtown side of the St. Regis. And there's a whole flock of gigantic, enormous, dirty, rotten, hollering pigeons are all walking around. They're staggering around. He goes right into the crowd. And, of course, he sees he's onto a good thing there. Somebody's been feeding him. They've been throwing the stuff out. He's running around like mad. He's grabbing all he can. And a couple of pigeons start shoving. He grabs one crust. Up he goes. I see him heading towards the Time Life building with his lunch. That was just a moment in the life of a spatzy. So, yeah, I'm a real spatzy digger. And I've often wondered why people don't get angry with spatzies. Has anyone called in and said they heard the expression spatzy? Yeah, one guy. He knows the expression spatzy. Sparrow to you. And it's not an English sparrow. I don't know what kind of a sparrow. Is an ornithologist out there listening? I mean, this is that little rotten, crummy bird. He's a short little bird. He's short, real little bird. I'm not talking about the big English. The English sparrow is a different kind of bird. I don't know what this kind of, what this bird is called, except they just referred to them as sparrows out in Indiana. There were other kinds of, other sort of sparrows they would refer to as English sparrow. They would say the song sparrow. This was just, oh, it's just a spatsy. And you'd hear thousands of them would be, oh, next door to us in this little town in Indiana, since the spatsy was a big bird around there, the spatsy was really Indiana's pigeon. In case you're interested. Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, the whole ground would be covered with them out there, yelling and hollering and hopping around. Well, this house next door to us was a sort of pseudo-Spanish house. Had one of these nutty, like a little bell tower built on the top of it. It was made out of stucco. Terrible house, yeah. You've seen those orange stucco houses with the imitation French doors and all that stuff. And stucco. It's called stucco. It's got all little sticky things that stick out from it, you know, all over, like little... it's kind of like real sticky plastic. Plaster sort of sticks out all over. And it was painted orange. It was supposed to be adobe. And it had... Yeah, I'm in the middle of Hammond, Indiana. I'm sorry. It was like a California house, and it had on the top of it an imitation bell tower. Well, in this bell tower, it was hollow, you see, and they had it built like a little Spanish bell tower. And inside... There was the most. I'll tell you what it was. It's very embarrassing to me because my bedroom was right next to it, and the Spatsies would be in this bell tower, like 8,000 of them, all night long, all day long. And well, if there weren't kids listening, I could tell you what kind of a house this must have been for Spatsies. This bell tower is a terrible thing, a rotten thing. And well, you know, it's there were a lot of Spatsies that were no better than they should be. A lot of those Spatsy chicks. And you could hear them hollering and yelling in there, screaming. And my mother would come in and say, "What are you doing in here?" I'd say, "Nothing. It's the Spatsies in the bell tower." You could hear them laughing, screaming, and hollering, spitting. And, well, it was very embarrassing. And I learned, you know, most people learn the facts of life from a poodle or from a butterfly. Well, we had Spatsies in Indiana.